Internet from her Obsessed with the West album. Before that, we heard Melissa Carper, Holding All the Cards. That's a great album with Dennis Crouch on bass. And we heard from Chris Scruggs' mom earlier, Gail Davies. This time it was Chris playing guitar and steel guitar on that one. And Rory Hoffman on the clarinet, one of the great, great Nashville guitar players, but also multi-instrumentalist like Chris, taking on clarinet duties for that. And before that, Sierra Farrell, who will be in town soon, May 16th at the Sylvie, five-time Grammy winner at the most recent Grammys, doing At the End of the Rainbow, and some great clarinet on there as well. So thanks for tuning in to the Country Reads Take Me Home show. Shout out to the North Country Drifters, local group with Greg Smith on clarinet, doing Western Swing. Any chance you get, support country music, local country music with clarinet. It's a true joy to spread a little bit of a spotlight on it today. Thank you to everybody who called in with messages of encouragement for our new puppy. It was a joy. And coming up next is A Public Affair, and youth activists taking on gun violence through the Wisconsin anti-violence effort with Tyler Kelly and Daryl Lofton. So stick around, and thanks for tuning in to WORT.
BBC News, I'm John Shea. The Pakistani military says it's freed more than 300 hostages from a passenger train seized by militants in Balochistan province. A spokesperson said 33 rebels were killed during the military's assault. He added that 21 civilian hostages and 4 soldiers were killed. Here's Anbarasan Etherajan.
The hijacking lasted more than 30 hours in a remote area. Information has been tightly controlled throughout. Now the military claims its operation is over, hundreds of passengers have been recovered, and the militants killed. A spokesman for the army said anyone involved will be brought to justice. One survivor told the BBC the militants killed both civilians and military personnel and said hostages were gunned down in front of him as they tried to escape. The Baloch Liberation Army has previously carried out deadly incidents in the province. This time it targeted a train with more than 400 passengers on board, making the attack one of its most high profile in years.
My apologies, that was our correspondent Azadeh Moshiri. The US Secretary of State has urged Russia to consider ending hostilities in Ukraine after Washington proposed a 30-day truce, a step backed by Kiev. Marco Rubio signalled that if Russia agreed, there was a real chance of peace. He also addressed the issue of deterrence against future Russian aggression.
What is the point of spending all this time to get a ceasefire, hopefully, and then a negotiated end of the war, only to see it re-spark up again in about 6 years? We're not interested in that, and they certainly aren't either. The question really is more about a deterrent. Can Ukraine create a sufficient deterrent against future aggression, against future invasion? Because every country in the world has a right to defend themselves.
U.S. officials are expected to travel to Moscow in the coming days. Canada has announced reciprocal levies on more than $20 billion worth of U.S. goods after Washington imposed 25% tariffs on all steel and aluminium imports. The industry minister said the U.S. move would affect North American industry. Earlier, the European Union retaliated in similar terms. Doctors in Australia say a patient made medical history by becoming the first person to be discharged from hospital with an artificial heart. The device may usher a revolution in heart surgery, Celia Hatton reports.
Twice the weight of a normal human heart, the artificial one is made largely of titanium, yet can hardly be felt after it's been implanted in the body. The Australian man who received it was at risk of severe heart failure before opting for the artificial implant. He crossed 2 medical milestones, becoming the first to be discharged from hospital with the device and also living with it for 100 days before receiving a human organ. He's apparently doing well now. The doctors say they hope titanium hearts could eventually replace the need for human heart transplants entirely.
World News from the BBC. The British-based Syrian Observatory for Human Rights says almost 1,400 civilians were killed during a week of violence in Syria's coastal region. The vast majority were Alawites, a religious minority, which largely supported the ousted former president Bashar al-Assad. The Syrian Observatory said many civilians were summarily executed by the new security forces. Bodies are still being discovered. Renewed violence has been reported in Ethiopia's northern Tigray region amid a power struggle within the former rebel group, the Tigray People's Liberation Front. The region's president accuses a faction led by the TPLF chairman of launching attacks in the capital, Mekele, and seizing the second largest city, causing civilian casualties. The violence has raised fears of a renewed civil war. Chinese state media say that officials have held talks with executives from Walmart to discuss reports that the American retail giant has been pressuring Chinese suppliers to absorb the cost of US tariffs. A social media post linked to Chinese Central Television said such moves could hurt the interests of both US and Chinese companies. It also appears to warn that Walmart could face retaliation from Beijing. Police in Portugal have detained a suspected drug trafficker, believed to be a key member of the Brazilian crime organisation PCC. The group is notorious for its use of extreme violence. Six people are said to have been detained in Brazil as part of the same operation. From Lisbon, Alison Roberts reports.
Portuguese police said that two machine guns were among the items seized at the house where the 38-year-old Brazilian national with Portuguese residence lived with his wife and children in a town just south of Lisbon. Groups such as Brazil's Primeiro Comando da Capital, or PCC, are known to bring cocaine into Europe using divers who hide their waterproofed cash in a compartment on the hull of ships. Divers are then used again to remove the drugs on arrival.
BBC News.
WORT would like to thank the following local restaurants and businesses who provided meals for our hardworking volunteers during our recent fall pledge drive. Bandung, Bonzo, Cardinal Bar, Cooper's Tavern, Einstein's Coffee and Bagels, Epic Mortgage Lending, Festival Foods, Glass Nickel Pizza West, Hong Kong Cafe, Ian's Pizza, Just Veggies, Lao Lang Zan, Mickey's Tavern, Melio's on MLK, Original Pancake House on University Avenue, Pizza Bruta, Soups I Did It Again in Spring Green, Teddy Wedgers, Weary Traveler, Wilma's Fund LGBT Assistance, and the Willie Street Co-op. WORT would like to extend our gratitude to these restaurants for helping put the community in WORT Community Radio through their donations of food. Gratefully yours for nearly five decades, this is WORT 89.9 FM, Madison.
Good afternoon, Madison. You're listening to WORT 89.9 FM. I'm your host, Ali Muldrow, and this is a public affair. And we are, you know, we're in the middle of the week. Nice job, y'all. You made it to Wednesdays. In December, the Madison community was rocked by a mass shooting at Abundant Life Christian School, just months before a shooting narrowly avoided at Mount Horeb School. These were just two incidents out of 330 school shootings documented by the K-12 school shooting database, the only entity that tracks these numbers. To talk about gun violence and how to address it, I am joined by two advocates who work for the Wisconsin anti-violence effort, WAVE Education Fund. Tyler Kelly is a policy and engagement associate at WAVE Educational Fund. After the Parkland shooting, Tyler joined the gun violence prevention movement, leading Milwaukee's chapter of March for Our Lives and WAVE Educational Fund's 2020 Get Out the Vote initiative. Daryl Lofton is the youth coordinator for WAVE. He told WORT after the Abundant Life shooting, quote, "It's up to us grown folks to stand up for our kids," unquote. I have a hard time calling the shooting that happened in Mount Horeb a shooting, because the student who perpetrated that incident actually was unarmed, had a gun replica and a BB gun, but not an actual gun. And he was the only person shot, and he was shot by the police. And yet it still lives in that category, because part of what dictated the response to him showing up at school with a fake gun is the very real threat of real guns that folks confront within education on a daily basis. Tyler, Daryl, I cannot thank you enough for joining me today for this conversation. I'm gonna start with you, Daryl. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good.
I really appreciate that you're here, and I really appreciate your quote in response to the Abundant Life shooting where a young person shot 10 people and killed an educator, a teacher, a person that was really beloved in that community, and killed another student before taking their own life. Talk to me a little bit about why you chose to respond to that incident by saying it is time for adults to stand up for kids.
Well, first of all, thank you for having me and Tyler on here. It's really important that we get this message out. But I think one of the motivations for me, honestly, was our kids, in our youth program, my own personal kids. These young minds are so bright, and they get and they understand what's going on, but they lack the power to vote, you know, and those are the things that we as adults are, us adults are the ones who are, you know, sitting in those congressional seats and those Senate seats and whatnot. And we're constantly, one of my young people said, we're constantly putting the onus on our young people to make the changes as far as how they deal with, you know, gun violence, you know, speak up, speak out, which is important. But us as adults need to be the ones who set the correct parameters and the rules and the laws so that they don't have to do those things. Their jobs in school is busy enough to have to worry about these things. So it's super important for me as a dad, as a mentor, as an organizer of young people, for us to take the mantle and really stand up for young people.
I so greatly appreciate that sentiment, and often feel like there's this tremendous disconnect between, you know, the older generations of folks and young people today. I, as an elder millennial, I didn't grow up rehearsing getting shot at school. I just didn't. There was no active shooter drill when I graduated in 2005. Now, that happened very soon after. But for my kids, that's shaped their entire educational experience. They've been rehearsing for an active shooter drill since they were in pre-K. Tyler, I don't want to assume that you're any younger than I am, but I am curious about, you know, how you're doing today and what brought you to this work and how kind of your positionality, your identity, the generation you're a part of influences your approach.
Yeah, always happy to be here. Always happy to share this important message. So as you talk about this generational change, something that I've gone around saying quite a bit is that I'm a part of the generation of the lockdown in schools, right? When I was in elementary school, that's when Sandy Hook happened. When I was in high school, that's when Parkland happened. And I have a really specific memory a couple of days after Parkland, my band teacher, a tough guy, an Army vet, came to us and was clearly upset about imagining his school being attacked like this, right? His students not being safe. And we had an hour-long discussion about which band instruments would make the best weapons in case there was a school shooter. And that's dystopian. And at that point, it was time to get involved because I didn't want to be thinking about the effectiveness of my trumpet in stopping a school shooting. I wanted to think about the effectiveness of me and my classmates standing up to change the way our country values its kids, to change the way our country values its people. So certainly this is sort of what brought me into the movement, and I've been really happy ever since to be fighting for gun violence prevention. And I think there's a lot of important things to talk about, from school shootings to suicides to the community violence that happens every day. And at WAVE, I'm really proud to work for an organization that knows that gun violence is preventable and that we know how to reduce gun deaths. So happy to talk through all the advocacy we're doing to do just that. Thanks for having us today.
Oh, Tyler, it's so great to get to hear from you. It's really nice to have you both on the air. If you want to join this conversation, if you have questions about gun violence or gun violence prevention, we want to hear from you here at WORT 89.9 FM. This is A Public Affair. I'm your host, Ali Maldro. The number is 608-256-2001. And we want to hear from you. I think that this this is a topic that I think there's a lot of confusion around. I actually think one of the things that is really misleading about the way we talk about school shootings is in part how we prepare for them. Part of how we prepare for school shootings is by kind of imagining that somebody random breaks into the building and you know, decides to shoot a bunch of children. The truth is the majority of school shootings are perpetrated by someone who goes to the school, by somebody who's done the active shooter drill, by somebody who knows what the process is. So not only are we kind of creating this mythology of the stranger who marches in to harm everyone, but we're also teaching the young people, you know, the person who's most likely to perpetrate the shooting, what we do in response to it. And I've thought a lot about how that feels counterintuitive. Daryl, I wanna talk to you about, you know, the difference between what we are doing to prevent violence in schools, what we are doing to prevent shootings, and what we should be doing, right? It seems like there's always a solution that is put more locks on the doors, make it harder to get into the school, you know, add security, have police there, you know, on a regular basis. That doesn't seem to be working. What is the solution to school shootings? What are the most effective steps we as a society can take to prevent, you know, mass shootings and school shootings?
Well, you're right. It's not working. And not only is it not working, but it's stressing out our young people who are already stressed out. All of these things that just keep reminding them that this is a possibility, that you could die today.
Wait, are you saying that making small children rehearse having an active shooter come into their school might not be good for their mental health?
Just a little bit. Yes, 100%. 100%.
Did you grow up with these active shooter drills?
No, I'm a Gen Xer. So
okay, Gen X.
and what you said earlier, I mean, I remember doing duck and cover drills because our fear early on was the Cold War, and that was stressful as a child. But after that, it was tornado drills. It was nothing. It was like, whatever. Nothing like today. I can't imagine being a young person in school today. I just cannot wrap my head around it. But one of the things that I do when I work with my young people, and it didn't start out that way. For me, it was going, you know, these are the laws. These are what we can do as far as voting and blah, 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 and all these things to help end gun violence in Wisconsin. But my young people encouraged me to dig deeper, to think deeper. And one of the things that we've come up with, or that I truly believe, if we take from when I was a young person a long, long time ago to the present, and the fact that we didn't have this issue, we didn't have, you know, mass shootings at the rate that we're having them now, what changed? What was the difference? And we talk about, and we hear a lot of people talk about root causes, and the root causes for me personally is that as a people, and especially young people, when you feel you have no power, you subconsciously or consciously seek power and strength and control. And the example I use is that a bully seeks power for whatever reason. We don't know, you know, specifically whether there's things at home or whatever, but a bully seeks power and they find someone weaker to prey upon to have that power. Transversely, now the person being bullied is also seeking power. And because of the lax or lack thereof gun laws in Wisconsin, that's an easy lift. Right, to pick up that firearm and have that control of whether and that power of taking my own life or taking lives of others to gain that power. We have to eliminate, we have to empower our young people to and teach them that they have power, they have strength, they have control. And and with that, we have to do, where I go back to us grown folks having to have a responsibility, we have to have the responsibility to make sure that guns aren't as accessible as they are. So that when a young person may waver from that feel of power, they don't have an easy go-to to fix it. I talked to a friend of mine who is an ex-con, and he is grown so much. I'm so proud of him. And we talk about this all the time. And he says that he's talked to others, and they said the power, and I quote, "The power of the blue steel is real." Mm. He said, and he's talked to other people who have perpetrated, you know, homicides or shot someone. And they said just that gun in their hand makes them feel powerful. And that got me also to start thinking we need to start changing what the definition of power is.
Mm. I feel like I rarely get an answer that is so deeply connected to what compels people and what motivates people. And so if we are terrifying our children, you know, it's, you know, the cure for fear is power, right? If you don't want to feel afraid all the time, feeling powerful is a really nice alternative, and a gun can make a person feel really powerful. I would love to believe that, you know, you put a ballot in our young people's hands, they feel powerful. You give a kid a driver's license, they feel powerful. You let a kid have a solo in their school's orchestra concert, there's a sense of power and command in all of those moments. And yet I think, you know, gun violence is prevalent in our society, and our young people seem to have embraced that as a means to feel powerful, at least on occasion. And I think, you know, specific to what an individual young person or individual person period is going through. Tyler, I asked Daryl the question, you know, we have added locks to our doors, we've added security, we've put more police in schools. I think we keep trying to make our schools bulletproof, and we keep seeing kids get shot at school. What are solutions that would actually be effective in terms of addressing school shootings and mass shootings more generally?
Yeah, so we're talking about two different problems: schools' safety and kids feeling safe at schools. And they're both really big, really important problems. Because if you're walking into your school and it feels like you're walking into some prison with metal detectors, and your school's spending all this money trying to make the hallways go diagonal because bullets don't travel that way, like, students understand why all these things are happening, and it's not going to help with their anxiety around that. And what students will see is their parents, adults in their society, standing up for them and strengthening our gun laws to make them safer. There's actually really great work going on in the state of Wisconsin in terms of trying to make schools safer. We have an Office of School Safety. It's been a great bipartisan endeavor. It was created by Scott Walker in the Department of Justice. And it runs a 24-hour tip line, so people can call. The program's called SUSO, See Something, Say Something. And it's a 24-hour tip line. You can call in if you have a friend that you've heard some things that concern you about, right? And think about our rural school districts, our small schools. How are they supposed to have like a 24-hour tip line so people can say something, right? When we think about the Abundant Life School, they just have a few hundred students. These are smaller schools, so we have these great resources in the state, including our Office of School Safety, that we know it's kind of hard to measure, right, if a school shooting doesn't happen, why that is. But we really do think that talking with the director and all of these things, that the Office of School Safety here in Wisconsin has saved lives. And we should really demand that our elected officials make sure that it stays in the governor's budget. 2 years ago, the Joint Finance Committee removed the Office of School Safety from the governor's budget. And luckily, a great group, bipartisan, Democrats, Republicans, said no, that was a mistake, and got some stopgap funding. So the Office of School Safety has been open for the past 2 years. But I really think we got to be talking to our reps in Madison, making sure that they're hearing from their constituents that, hey, we have this life-saving office. It's been supported by Democrats. It's been supported by Republicans. We all know that we need our kids to feel safer, so let's put our dollars behind our values in making our kids feel safer.
I completely appreciate both, like, talking about wanting our kids to feel safer and then also just wanting our kids to actually be safer. The material reality of, you know, what it means to keep guns out of our schools, out of our grocery stores, out of our concerts. What it means to live in a world where your right to exist is just as important as somebody else's right to be armed. I was at an event yesterday and a young person was talking about, it was the 100 Black Men's History Bowl. So shout out to the 100 Black Men of Madison, Dane County. I love you so much. But they were, one of the kids was talking about the core tenets of Martin Luther King's beliefs. And he said, you know, his first principle was nonviolence is a way of life for courageous people. And I feel very brave in being unarmed in a society that you would be amazed, y'all, at how many of my friends think I should own a gun. You know, and I have three little kids who live with me and people are like, still, you should have a gun. I think we've got to be brave in order to make a safer world. I want to welcome to the air Fawn. Thank you so much for joining us today on WORT 89.9 FM. Madison. I'm your host, Ali Muldrow. This is A Public Affair. You want to talk to us a little bit about kids' mental health, I hear.
You bet. Hi, Ali, and this is, and everyone. This is, can you hear me all right? So I really appreciate your bringing into the conversation the fact that we've been throwing so much attention and at the guns and shooters. I totally agree that we should reduce at all costs the opportunity, the access to guns, the opportunity for kids to have guns. But also, I mean, in the case of Newtown, it was an 18-year-old who, you know, so it's not just minors who need to restricted access. But I think that in addition to restricting access, we need to address the root cause of how people feel when they decide to take that action, that terrible action. And I think that now that we know that guns and shooters are what grabs attention, any child or anyone who seeks attention, they're going to think, oh, guns and shooters, become a shooter. That way I'll get the attention, which is actually what works. And let's look at it as a community-based issue. What is going on inside these kids? How can every child, every member of the school community, every member of our greater community, if we are that bold to go that far, should feel seen and heard and understood and get, have their needs met in whatever ways that we can. So like a restorative justice approach preventatively towards this issue. That's what I strongly recommend. And people on both sides of the aisle, like the Republicans, say thoughts and prayers and attention, they mental health, not don't look at the guns, look at the shooter. And so we'll have lots of support from that end if we go to pursue bolstering mental health and really feeling a community participation, of really feeling a community belonging. Because at Abundant Life, I understand the shooter was a student who was relatively new at the school, hadn't grown up with the others. Many of the others had known each other since kindergarten. They would not think to harm their fellow students. But someone who was new and whatever issues she had going on in her life, you know, that led her to feel that she was at odds with the others.
And Fawn, I want to thank you so much for you know, really highlighting the needs of our young people to feel welcomed in communities, to feel a part of the community, and talking about the reality of young people needing attention, feeling lonely, feeling isolated, and feeling like outsiders, and those being, you know, compelling dynamics in terms of why young people perpetrate violence and also why adults perpetrate violence. And so thank you for everything you brought to the air in your comments. I want to invite folks who are listening to give us a call. The number is 608-256-2001. We want to hear from you. I also want to give a little bit of a shout out to the team that is making this show possible. Thank you so much to our receptionist, Mary Jo. We love you no matter what. You're the absolute best. Thank you for always, like, you know, I walk into this studio and you're the first person I see, and it's always such a, like, gift. I want to thank my engineer, Jay, because I have technological questions about my own personal devices that I'd like to ask him after the show today, because he seems to really understand how our equipment works. And I think that may extend to things I actually personally own. So thank you in advance, Jay. Also, just thank you for everything you do to make this show possible. And our brilliant producer, Sarah, we had a little bit of a shift in how today's show was going to go. You all don't always get to see kind of the behind the scenes, but sometimes at 10 o'clock in the morning, we don't know who's going to be able to make it. And Sarah spends an hour freaking out so I don't have to. You know, and making sure that we pull together a conversation that is meaningful. These folks are some of the best people you could work with. They're a Virgo and a Libra. There's a lot of balance happening. Mary Jo, I'm going to find out what your astrological sign is later on. But could not be luckier getting to work with this team, getting to have these conversations. Fawn, thank you again for giving us a call. Tyler, I want to give you the opportunity to talk a little bit about what Fawn was emphasizing, and then I'd love to kind of talk about the Day of Action and your youth programming with both of you. Tyler, talk to me a little bit about the mental health component. There is an argument that this isn't really about guns, that when somebody is at, you know, a certain space within their mental health, if they don't have a gun, they'll use a car or a knife or something else to harm people. Tell me why we should focus on guns, why we should focus on mental health, if we should be focusing on both. Yeah, are these competing factors?
Yeah, the answer is yes, let's focus on all of it, right? We really take an approach at WAVE that we need to address the root causes of gun violence. And one of those root causes is gun ownership, right? If you look at the United States and you look at countries across the developed world, there's two really big anomalies that we have. We're really the only country that has school shootings, and we're really the only country that has more citizen-owned guns than people. And those things are related, and policies that prevent firearms from getting into the hands of people who are going to harm themselves or others, those things are very important. We also have a mental health crisis as a country, and we need to work to get more providers, make sure, and it goes beyond, you know, mental health goes beyond just having a school psychologist or a therapist at every school. Mental health is about kids not worrying about being hungry at school, right? Mm. Mental health is about making sure that our kids aren't stressed out on social media, right? All of these different, there's lots of factors at play. So we should be addressing all of them. And at the same time, all of those factors don't mean that we can't also focus on guns.
I greatly appreciate that. And I don't think having adolescent people, young people who are struggling with their mental health is that unique to this period of time or this place in the world. I do think having tons of weapons available to young people as they struggle with their mental health creates a pretty terrorizing dynamic. Daryl, I want to talk to you about the work you're doing with young people directly. What are you all doing to involve young people in this work, to highlight the voices of young people as they, you know, work to address school shootings, work to address gun violence, face the consequences of this being normal in our society on a regular basis?
I'd love to. I love talking about my kids or my young people. Well, first of all, WAVE has been dedicated to raising up the youth voice since about 2018 with their summer internship program, which I have been so lucky to be a part of the last 3 years. And that summer internship program goes from June to August. And we, you know, get young people from all over. And our focus, again, we want to teach them the legislation. We want them to know what's really happening on the legislative side so that they can go out and advocate and do some advocacy. And it's so important because I'd say probably 90% of the people I talk to, and that 90% is relative because I was a history major and math is not my forte. But I'd like to say about 90% of the people I talk to about gun violence prevention or the gun laws in Wisconsin have no idea what the actual gun laws are. They have an idea based on what they see on TV or a movie, like, oh, you have to have a permit. Not in Wisconsin. That is not a real thing in Wisconsin.
So wait, in Wisconsin, you don't have to have a permit?
No. Wisconsin is an open carry state.
Do you have to have a permit to conceal carry?
You have to have a permit to conceal carry, which is kind of funny to me. And Tyler, correct me if I'm wrong, but if you're carrying that's not concealed, that's fine. You don't need any license.
Yo,
for that.
So if you're like waving that gun around, you just got it like in your hand, you don't need a permit.
Correct.
But if you have it in your jacket, you do.
You do.
Okay. That feels. That does not feel great.
No. When we say common sense gun laws, this is kind of the thing that we're you know, kind of getting at, just basic common sense. But I get the same response from our young people when we have our first day of our summer internship. Okay. And a lot of the things that we talk about, you know, gun deaths in Wisconsin and the suicide rate in Wisconsin. And we talk about all these things. And collectively, they're like, what? But also they're like, okay, how do we stop this? This is crazy. We need to stop this, right? And so that initial buy-in is huge. And our young people, I mean, I do recruiting all over, and I mean, to middle schools, high schools, and I've got a couple of young people who are in college or their first couple of years of college, and they are so involved and it's refreshing for me, because at that age, I was not as ambitious about, you know, going out and putting myself out there for a cause. At 16, 17 years old, that was not in my brain, but with these young people. And I thought, honestly, it was going to be difficult, but the fact that I have to turn people away from my internship tells me that these young people are fed up with this as well. So one of the things with our internship has been going, it's going great. We do events throughout the summer. They created an event last summer, and we called it our Orange Flag event, where they planted 708 orange flags in a highly visible area. And then we had an event that 708 flags is the average gun deaths in Wisconsin last year. And that includes homicides, accidental shootings, suicides. That's the average. And that is ridiculous. And when people actually see these flags in this area, it starts to sink in. This was not my idea. These were these young people's idea. I'm constantly trying to put them up because they are amazing.
I think you hear a number like that and it's almost hard to imagine. It's hard to imagine hundreds of people losing their lives to gun violence in a place like Wisconsin. It's hard to imagine all of those people's stories and all of those people's families and all of the things that those people wanted to do with their lives. And it's profound to have young people turn something as horrific and tragic as that into an art installation that forces you to see a physical representation of each of those individuals. That's pretty beautiful, Daryl. I'm so proud of your young people. And I can tell you're like beaming with pride. And at the same time, it's sad to think that, like, you know, when you were a kid, like my big thing when I was like a teenager was like my after school fast food job so that I could have money to rent movies at Blockbuster. So I was very proud that you could get your own Blockbuster card at the age of 16. Now that is, you know, you want to talk about elder millennial. I was out here renting movies because there was, you know, there was no Facebook when I went to high school and there was no active shooter drills. And, you know, I was basically churning my own butter is the point. Ken, I want to bring you to the air to talk to us a little bit about the influence of media, the influence of video games, what you think is making kids more prone to violence.
All right. Well, I'm on. I just wanted to bring that up as a factor and a cause, because I think it's really prevalent when you detail the fact that we're the most violent society in the world, and our entertainment industry and our gaming industry in particular, where they have these cute little creatures and critters who move around the screen and just slaughter each other. And this, it is the attraction and the lure of the gaming industry, the entertainment industry, where it's just violence, good versus evil constantly. And I think it has a dramatic effect on our kids and our culture.
I greatly appreciate that perspective. I do think it's always complicated for me when I think about people kind of thinking these modern moments are the most violent moments in American history. And I think that's because I'm the descendant of enslaved people. And so for me, for my family, America has always been a pretty horrifically violent place, a place that is capable of extreme violence perpetrated against all kinds of populations of people. But I think as a member of the Black community, if I was going to say the most violent thing in American history is our media, is our video games, that would feel inaccurate, right? We come from a country where people have been lynched routinely throughout history in all kinds of fashions. But I do want to lean into that point. Tyler, do you think that there is a need to kind of, take into consideration how media is influencing our young people in terms of violence, whether it's video games or social media or the kinds of books our young people are reading, the kinds of shows they're watching, the kinds of plays and operas they attend?
Yeah, there's some public health research coming out on this, and sort of the findings have been mixed. There's been some people that have found there to be some relationship. There's been other people that have found there not to be a relationship. And I think it's really important that this research is starting up until 2019. This is something a lot of people don't know. The CDC wasn't allowed to research gun violence as a public health issue. And in 2019, that changed, and thankfully now we can really have many more evidence-based violence prevention solutions. And we are learning more about gun violence as a problem. And as this new evidence is coming to light, there has been one very, very clear cause of gun violence. That's kids getting access to guns that they shouldn't be able to get access to, right? So,
it feels so obvious, Tyler, and yet it seems like we just are so excited to talk about almost anything but the, it feels like the elephant in the room, right?
But and I'm all for, I think that we should continue looking into every cause of gun violence, right? But yeah, I'm with you. It's the elephant in the room. Let's not allow any of these entertainment or mental health. Sometimes it feels like the gun industry is trying to distract us from what the cause of the problem is by trying to perpetrate this narrative that, if kids stop playing video games, kids play video games all over the world. Kids play violent video games all over the world. But these school shootings, they're oddly American. So I have a little bit of doubt that this is like the primary cause, but it certainly could be a cause. And I think the research will be important to follow as it comes out.
I really appreciate, the kind of evidence-based approach that you have to this conversation. And I do think it's interesting that people would rather have a conversation about police and schools, would rather have a conversation about mental health, would rather have a conversation about how many locks we should have, than have a conversation about what it takes to keep a kid from having a gun. Right. I mean, that's there is no kid should be able to walk into a store and buy a gun. We all agree with that. Right. We all know that that's true. So no kid should be able to go home, open a closet, grab a gun and take it with them to their school. Right. That's the conversation I really want us to be able to have. And if you want to be able to have it with us, the number is 608-256-2001. If you're just sitting down, just settling in for lunch, just like jumping into your car, I want to remind you that you are listening to WORT 89.9 FM, Madison. My name is Ali Muldrow, and today we're talking about the epidemic of gun violence with Tyler Kelly and Daryl Lofton. If you have questions or comments, give us a call at 608-256-2001. We want to hear from you. I want to give a huge shout out to Ken and Fawn for bringing their perspective to the airwaves. It was really, really nice to hear from you all. I'm grateful for what you added to this conversation. We need to have as many voices at the table when we're talking about something like this as possible. So please give us a call. Let us know what your perspective is. Daryl, I want to talk to you a little bit about your day of action and the organizing effort that WAVE is doing to address this issue, to address gun violence in our community.
I'm going to push this to Tyler because he knows more about the day of action and the nuances. I know that it is March or May 20th, and we are looking to have people go to speak to their representatives directly, and let them know that this is an issue. This is not just, you know, Wave going in and saying, you know, talking to these representatives saying you should change this because we think this. We want the constituents to actually be there on, you know, and talk to these people. I'm focusing on bringing as many young people to come and talk to, because we can't vote, but you can speak to your representatives, you know, and their voice means a little bit different than my voice. So it has a certain level of weight, I believe.
As somebody who's had this conversation with my own children, I'm like, there are moments in these conversations with my kids that will stick with me for the rest of my life. Tyler, we know that it's happening on May 20th. We know that we're asking people to talk to their representatives. Tell us a little bit about, you know, where is this day of action happening? What all are people doing from when to when? You know, if you're out there listening and you want to mark your calendar, you want to make sure that you're there. Tyler, what do people need to know to participate?
Yeah, we really appreciate it. If people are interested in signing up, you can go to wavedfund.org/events and you'll find our day of action right there. It'll be all day sort of thing. We'll give you a little training in the morning, teach you about the different laws that Wave is advocating for in this session. Wave is also being joined by the Gun Violence Prevention Coalition of Wisconsin. We're doing some really innovative organizing in our state where all the gun violence prevention organizations you've heard of, we're all working together. Moms Demand Action, Every Town for Gun Safety, March for Our Lives, Giffords, Brady, all of these different groups that are doing great work all across the country. We're bringing together the top experts. We're bringing together the top advocates, and they're all working together to help make Wisconsin safer. And I think Daryl kind of hit it right on the head with, let's get those trusted messengers in the room, right? Because legislators are people too, right? They're coming from their communities. They have kids. They've heard these things from their kids. So when we bring a young person in the room, there's going to be a little part of them. There's still some human up there, even if they're denying these gun laws that we all think are so logical, right? They're still people. So they'll see their own kids in the kids that we bring. They'll see their own doctors and the doctors that we're going to be bringing down. They'll see their own, you know, kids' teachers. We have all of these different people, faith leaders, all these different groups that are coming to us and saying that gun violence in Wisconsin and gun violence in this country are not okay. And they're asking, what can we do about it? Well, we take a day every other year, once a legislative session, and we march all of our supporters into the Capitol. And we're hoping to have hundreds coming in, talking to their legislators. We'll get the meeting set up. We'll train you on how to do it. You don't need any prior advocacy experience. You know, we'll take anyone and we'll let you tell your story to your legislator. Tell them to their face, this is what I believe needs to happen. And we're not just targeting legislators that haven't supported our bills in the past. We meet with every single legislator. We thank legislators who take their actions. And we ask them to do more, because everyone should be doing more until we kind of stop the senseless gun violence in our state.
Can I add one more thing to that?
Of course.
Quick? Thank you. For myself, as a person of color, we also at Wave recognize that it is during the week, it is during the day, and it is difficult for some of our Black and Brown people to be able to attend something like this. Now, we encourage as many of those who can attend to attend. But we also want to make sure that your voice is heard as well. So one thing that we've decided to do this year is send anything, a message that you want, a paragraph or so, to my email, which is dlofton, D-L-O-F-T-O-N, at wavedfund.org. And we will go to your representative and give that information out. Because our voice matters as well. I know that historically, politics has not been for us, as a whole. So, it is important for us as Wave to make sure that we do represent everybody, and we do want to have a voice at the table. So if we can, you know, encourage, again, we first of all want to encourage people to actually physically go to our website and sign up to go. But if you feel that you have something to say, but you just cannot get off of work because life is life and you got to, you know, we don't have that freedom.
Yeah, you got to put food on the table. You got to pay your bills. Right. You got to make rent, right? And you still deserve to be able to tell your representative, I don't want my baby to get shot at school. Like, exactly. I don't want my child to get harmed at the mall. I don't want to live in a world where, you know, a person's right to a weapon, you know, is more precious to our society than my right to exist.
Exactly. So, yeah, so I encourage people to send me an email with a paragraph or so and your zip code so I kind of know who your representative is, or if you already know, please let me know. And we will, what we're going to do is our young people have said, we're going to go to our representatives, but then after we do that, we're going to take all of these letters that we've gotten from people and we're going to go and speak for them. So.
Oh man, that is so incredibly like beautiful and heartwarming and at the same time just deeply tragic. And I've thought about this a lot because, you know, the school shooting that happened here in Madison at Abundant Life Christian School was something that my children were incredibly aware of. Not my youngest, my 3-year-old, you know, kind of she stays away from the news. She's really into Paw Patrol right now. The world gets saved for her every single day by a group of puppies, and she's a very happy little person. But my oldest, who is 15, you know, asked me the night of the shooting what we would do if she died at school. And I gotta give props to my partner, Sandy, because he said, we would never be the same, but we would try really hard to love each other and remember. And then my 10-year-old, when I was dropping her off at school the next day, I said, you know, are you going to be okay? Are you worried about the school shooting? And she's a very logical little introvert. And she said, you know, it's very statistically unlikely that a shooting would happen twice in 1 week at 2 different schools. And then she said the most 10-year-old thing that I think she's ever said. She said, and also, my teacher would never let anything happen to us. And it just kind of like broke my heart because she like believed it wholeheartedly. She was like, Mrs. Hall would keep me safe. And it made me so angry that Mrs. Hall would ever be in that position. Shout out to her. We love you so much. Thank you for making my kid feel protected and loved and seen and helping her with like reading and math. She's getting so much better. But like that's her job, is the reading and the math. Her job is not to be a human shield if somebody tries to hurt her students. I wonder, as you all listen to young people talk about this issue, if you're ever, you know, deeply surprised by their hopefulness or their sense that this can be changed. I find it hard not to be defeated. Tyler, you seem to have a lot of energy towards making the solution possible. How do you maintain kind of that sense of hope in the face of an issue that can really easily make you feel quite hopeless?
First of all, I don't think we have a choice but to remain hopeful, right? Like the alternative of accepting a status quo where guns are the number one killer of our kids, right? I don't think we can accept that. And I think politicians are looking forward at a time where most voters will have grown up going through active shooter drills, right? We're getting there. Every year, there's more people from my generation and younger that are voting, and they're voting like their lives depend on it, and like their kids' lives depend on it, right? I have heard from some younger parents now that they feel like my kids are in the second generation of the school shooting, right? If you were going to school, there's kids that, right? There's parents. The parents of the Columbine kids are sending their kids to school right now, right? That is happening in our country. So just so many of our people have the same experience. We see the polls around gun violence prevention getting to just crazy support. Marquette Law released within the past week showing, again, 80% of people agreeing on red flag laws, majorities of Democrats, Republicans, independents. believe that, hey, if somebody's in crisis, if a judge orders, the judge should be able to take somebody's gun away when they're in crisis, right? This is like common sense stuff. And so there's the motivation because you've grown up hearing about gun violence your whole life, and now you can vote and you're going to vote like that. And then there's also people coming together and being aware that, hey, something's got to change. So that's what gives me hope. And I don't think there's another choice but to be hopeful because of how bad it is.
My young people give me hope. My young people give me hope every day. And to give you an idea, as the summer internship ended my first year, a group of those young people said, we don't want to just stop in August. We want to continue. We want to do this all the time. So we created a youth advisory board made up of these young people who have gone through the summer internship that goes year round, and they do amazing things. They are my hope. They are my motivation to continue doing this because they're motivated to continue to do this. So
I feel like that's, you know, one says something about the quality of programming you're creating, because young people, you know, don't always want to opt for more stuff, you know? So if young people are saying, oh, I did this for a little bit and it feels like what I should be doing all the time, kudos to you, Daryl. Like, you're doing a really, really nice job. And also, I think, you know, there's got to be kind of a light at the end of the tunnel. There's got to be a series of victories that, you know, allow for you to do this work and keep kind of chipping away at this really large issue. Tyler, I want to give you the opportunity to talk about Governor Evers' Office of Safety, the work he just started doing around gun violence prevention. Tell me if that feels like a victory, if you all feel like you can take it and run with it and use it to further impact our community when it comes to gun violence.
So this is an important point. Gun violence has changed a lot as a policy issue in the past couple of decades. It used to be something that no governor would want to be a gun violence prevention governor. That used to be politically as bad as it gets. But now we have a gun violence prevention governor. When we talk about our policy priorities, 10 priorities deep, all in the governor's budget. And we greatly appreciate Governor Evers for doing this and for consistently being out there. So some people may have heard the governor just a few weeks ago announced the creation of an Office of Violence Prevention for the state. We're only the 14th state in the country to have an Office of Violence Prevention, and we're very excited to do it. And sometimes these Offices of Violence Prevention, it's just like a little press conference, and we create the office and we never find dollars for it, so it's not able to do anything. No, the governor's staff went and they took all of these different programs that had been allocated federal dollars, and they collected all the dollars that weren't being used and gave $10 million to preventing gun violence over the next 2 years. And, you know, it just really shows a commitment, and it's going to save lives. And in this movement, in this state, there's not a lot of times where we can come together and really celebrate victories. Gun violence prevention activists get together after a lot of shootings. There's a lot of sad press conferences, but it was very awesome to be with the governor, be really excited about something that's going to save lives. And I think it's just a sign that the headwinds are turning, that we're going to be getting win after win after win for the gun violence prevention movement, because the people have already changed their mind. And I think the politicians are starting to catch on.
Daryl and Tyler, I think you all are my hope. I can't really imagine having a more uplifting conversation about gun violence. I was very prepared to be very sad talking to you both today. And you all have brought so much love to this conversation and to the work that you do. And I'm so grateful you're doing it. I want to remind folks that they can get involved. They can join your day of action on May 20th, that there's more than one way to be there. You can also send Daryl a note, what you want said to your representative. I want to thank folks for listening to WORT 89.9 FM. I'm your host, Ali Muldrow. This is A Public Affair. Happy Wednesday, y'all. Thank you so much, Tyler. Thank you so much, Daryl, for joining me today.
Thank you. Just keeps on compounding, but the FCC can never shut this pirate sound down. Lavender. we come and never pre-recorded, with information that will never be reported. Disregard the mainstream, media distorted. We come and listen and supported, live and direct, we come and never pre-recorded, with information that will never be reported. Disregard the mainstream, media distorted. We come and listen and supported, live and direct, we come and never pre-recorded, with information that will never be reported. Disregard the mainstream, media distorted. We come and listen and supported, live and direct, we come and never pre-recorded, with information.
You are listening to WORT 89.9 FM Madison. Next up, Letters in Politics.
If I could ask you to tell all your sweet tones off.
Yeah.
This is Pacifica Radio's Letters in Politics. On today's show, as Secretary of State Marco Rubio meets with high-ranking Ukrainian officials in Saudi Arabia to talk about a potential peace deal with Russia, we'll spend the hour with Katrina Vandenhoevel, the editorial director and publisher of The Nation magazine. She's covered Russia for many years and will talk about the abrupt change in policy towards Ukraine with the new Trump presidency, and we'll also take your phone calls. That's next on Letters in Politics. But first, the news.
BBC News, I'm John Shea. The Pakistani military says it's freed more than 300 hostages from a passenger train seized by militants in Balochistan province. A spokesperson said 33 rebels were killed during the military's assault. He added that 21 civilian hostages and 4 soldiers were killed by the Baloch Liberation Army before the military operation began. Azadeh Moshiri reports from Islamabad.
The military claims its operation is over, hundreds of passengers have been recovered and the militants killed. A spokesman for the army said anyone involved will be brought to justice. One survivor told the BBC the militants killed